Tuvalu's election results, unrest in Papua New Guinea, and more. Today is Thursday, February 29th, and welcome back to Pacific Airwaves, a podcast on the Pacific Islands from the Southeast Asia Program and the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at CSIS. I'm Andreika Natsalagawa, in the studio with Harrison Pratat from AMTI. Harrison is filling in for Monica while she's in Asia presenting AMTI's report on environmental damage in the South China Sea. Welcome to the show, Harrison.
Excited to be here, Andreika.
So, Harrison, you know, for background for our audience, when we are preparing sort of the script for each episode, we like to put a little fun fact about each presenter. And Harrison, I've been working with you for about 6 years now, and I've just learned that you have a very particular interest in hard-boiled eggs. Can you tell me more about this? And is it really true that you ate 10 hard-boiled eggs in one sitting?
No, that's not true at all.
It's not true at all. So no. I've been misled.
Who
I've
told you that?
Misinformed.
I mean, that's a lot of eggs. I wouldn't want to eat 10 in one sitting.
That's why I was concerned when I saw that fun fact in the script. I was a little worried about that. But so you're not a fan of hard-boiled eggs? What's the story here?
No, I mean, they're fine. I just wouldn't eat 10. That's a lot.
Okay. What is the number you would eat?
Probably like 2 or 3. 3 is probably pushing it.
Well, folks, you've heard it here first on Pacific Airwaves. 2 to 3 is the recommended amount of hard-boiled eggs to eat. And with that...
Anyway, turning to the Pacific, the smallest UN member state held a consequential election on January 26th.
Harrison, can you tell us what country is the smallest UN member state?
It's Tuvalu. Its population is only 11,000. The election matters regionally for two reasons. First, Tuvalu is one of the last 3 countries in the Pacific that recognized Taiwan. Second, Tuvalu just signed a groundbreaking climate and security treaty with Australia last November.
Right. And for our listeners, this is the Falapila Union. Longtime listeners will remember that Australia agreed to provide opportunities for Tuvaluans to work and receive education in Australia amid the climate crisis. In exchange, Tuvalu has effectively given Australia a veto over future security arrangements.
The former Prime Minister Kaseya Natano supports both Taiwan and the Falapila Union. But other politicians have argued that diplomatic ties with Taiwan should be reviewed and that the Falapila Union infringes on Tuvaluan sovereignty.
On election night, Prime Minister Natano lost his seat. In the new parliament, former Attorney General and senior fisheries official Feleti Teo ran unopposed for the premiership and assumed office on February 26th. This is the first time in Tuvalu's history that a prime minister has been nominated unopposed.
Teo hasn't made public statements on reviewing ties with Taiwan or the Falapila Union, but we can make some guesses about his positions. At least Taiwan seems optimistic. Their Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a statement hailing Teo's friendly stance towards Taiwan. And Teo was involved in the Falapila Union negotiations, so he's probably not going to scrap it. But he could still try to renegotiate parts of the agreement.
Another Pacific prime minister is facing possible replacement in Papua New Guinea, where the opposition lodged a motion of no confidence against James Marape after deadly riots last month. But the opposition isn't united behind a single alternative, so they'll have a hard time removing the prime minister.
Even with the opposition split, Marape has been maneuvering to hinder them. On February 15th, he referred the motion to the Supreme Court. The next day, the Speaker of Parliament moved forward with a vote of confidence while the opposition was in the middle of a leadership challenge. The opposition staged a walkout, and Marape won the vote 84-0.
Then, last week, Parliament adjourned until May. Marape denied that the adjournment was done to avoid a vote of no confidence.
Currently, Marape probably has the support in Parliament to defeat a vote of no confidence if it comes up again in May. But this is PNG politics, and coalitions can shift overnight.
Meanwhile, intertribal warfare is escalating in Papua New Guinea's Enga province. On February 18th, at least 54 people were killed in an ambush. Reports suggest that the violence arose from a payback cycle between the two main tribes in the region.
Prime Minister Marape says the massacre was an act of domestic terrorism, and he's considering a regional state of emergency. He's also seeking Australian support. But he says Papuan police and defense personnel will have responsibility for the front lines.
And it makes sense for Papuan personnel to be the face of ground operations, but they're going to need a lot of support. They often find themselves outgunned and outmanned by the tribal fighters.
Tribal violence is becoming more sophisticated. Thanks to arms traders, fighters have more powerful weaponry, which allows them to use advanced guerrilla warfare tactics. It's no surprise that the police commissioner David Manning has equated firearm smugglers with terrorists.
Moving southeast from Papua New Guinea, the Solomon Islands is heading into an election on April 17th. These elections were originally scheduled for 2023, but Prime Minister Manase Sagavare had it delayed because the country was also hosting the 2023 Pacific Games.
The two major opposition parties are uniting in an alliance that they call the Coalition for Accountability, Reform, and Empowerment, or CARE. The coalition is running on public service, pay raises, and job creation.
Meanwhile, Sogavare is running on his record, emphasizing national unity and infrastructure development. He's leaning into his look north foreign policy of strengthening ties with China or remaining committed to traditional partners like Australia.
The opposition candidate, Matthew Walle, advocates for a referendum on the Solomon Islands Security Pact with Beijing and says that he wants to pursue balanced international engagement.
Whoever wins the election will have the opportunity to pass historic legislation that would reserve more seats for women in the provincial assemblies. In the 45 years since independence, only 16 women have served in the provincial assemblies.
In the Cook Islands, the deputy prime minister has been replaced after the previous one was convicted for corruption. The new deputy prime minister is Albert Nicholas.
And this is somewhat of a surprising choice, since both Nicholas and Prime Minister Mark Brown are from Rarotonga, the main island of the Cook Islands. Traditionally, a Rarotongan prime minister chooses a deputy from the outer islands and vice versa. But Brown says that his new deputy has experience and connections that will allow him to effectively oversee integration of the outer islands into the national economy.
With that going on, New Zealand's Foreign Minister Winston Peters paid a visit to Rarotonga. He announced around $10 million in funding to help the Cook Islands respond to climate change.
From there, Peters traveled to Samoa. He and his counterparts signed a statement of partnership that sets out priority areas for cooperation over the next 4 years, including climate change, development, and security.
Meanwhile, Tongan Prime Minister Siausi Sovaleni met with his counterpart in New Zealand for the two sides to discuss their continued partnership under the new government.
And moving over to Micronesia, leaders there are warning the United States that failure to approve funding for the Compacts of Free Association agreements would benefit Beijing. Palau's leader, Suranjil Whips, reminded the United States that the Compacts of Free Association, or COFA, agreements give the United States strategic control of a vast area of the Pacific, stretching from Hawaii to Asia. He warned that delays in signing these agreements are strengthening the arguments of pro-Beijing politicians at home.
On February 13th, a bipartisan effort in the U.S. Senate failed to add COFA funding to a $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. This is a strange situation where leaders of both parties agree that passing COFA funding is in the national interest, but the budgetary chaos on the Hill makes it difficult to see the path forward.
While Congress was struggling to pass COFA funding, the Air Force hosted five other countries for a major joint exercise in Guam and the Northern Mariana Islands. Pacific Air Force's Commander Kevin Schneider said the exercises demonstrated a level of cooperation that can only be envied in Beijing, Moscow, and Pyongyang.
But China has continued to pursue cooperation across the region. On February 7th, China hosted a group meeting with envoys of eight Pacific Island countries. Reports have also emerged that Chinese police are working in Kiribati, despite the absence of a public policing agreement.
Besides China, Japan is also advancing ties with the region. Japanese Foreign Minister Yoko Kamikawa traveled to Samoa and Fiji for a ministerial meeting with Pacific Island countries. The meeting focused on preparing for the Pacific Island Leaders Meeting, or PALM, this coming July.
Japan's engagement with the Pacific is taking on more geopolitical significance as China becomes a bigger regional player. The ministerial meeting this month produced a statement opposing any changes to the status quo by, quote, force or coercion. Some interpreted that as a veiled reference to China.
Also this month, Japan conducted cyber defense drills with five Pacific countries. The Pacific is a critical area for Japanese cybersecurity, since it serves as a transit point for submarine telecommunications cables.
And that's all we have for today.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Pacific Airwaves. If you're looking for Pacific Waves, be sure to check out the daily news podcast from Radio New Zealand. Let us know what you think about our coverage by writing to our main email at searadio@csis.org.
If you're not following us already, please subscribe or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming platform.
Our producer is Marla Hiller. Special thanks to our intern Josiah Gottfried for his assistance with this episode. My name is Andreika Natsalagawa.
And I'm Harrison Preita.
And we'll see you next month for another episode of Pacific Airwaves.
Let's go get some hard-boiled eggs.
Sounds good to me.